Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
US Vice President Kamala Harris says that she has secured the support of enough Democratic delegates to secure her party's nomination for the White House. But how will she fare in the contest against Donald Trump if this does indeed come to pass? And might Democrats come to regret falling in line so quickly rather than having a more open contest of all of the talents? To consider these questions, I'm joined now by Chicago-born writer and commentator Bonnie Greer, and by the director of the US and Americas program with Chatham House Think Tank, Dr. Leslie Vinjamuri. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Leslie, can I start with you first? Would it be better if she had earned the nomination in her own right, or do you think that Democrats will just accept this is a luxury that their circumstances don't afford them?
I think it's the latter. I think that at this point, it's been such an extraordinary process watching the 3 weeks of the president after the presidential debate, deciding and deliberating over what to do, watching a very divided Democratic Party. And at some level, the public, but also the party, didn't really have the appetite for what in an ideal world, if this had happened several months ago, might have been the right way to go. But it's been quite extraordinary and remarkable, the extent to which the party has really coalesced around her. Donations are at an extraordinary high level for such a short period of time. And it feels like the momentum in the party and in the country is really to move forward on a very positive and united foot, at a time when we're going to see clearly a very nasty and likely very divisive campaign.
Bonnie, if you are opposed to the idea of President Trump version 2.0, you don't have any time for resting on your laurels. But at the same time, as a woman, a person of colour as well, you must also want to just take a moment to reflect on the historic nature of her nomination.
Well, I don't want to take a moment to reflect on it. It's something I didn't think I'd live long enough to see. But to take that part away, the Republican Party under Donald Trump changed the body politic in the United States. The game changed. And whether the Democratic Party liked it or not, that was the landscape that they had to play on. The Republican Party actually has become a cult, pretty much. It's certainly not the Republican Party I grew up with. And a lot of people in the Republican Party might say that as well. So the landscape has changed, and the Democratic Party had to find a way to respond to that landscape. It had no choice. And I think that Biden, who is an old stager, he's been in politics most of his life, certainly most of my lifetime, he knew what he was doing. And so it's, as we say here, he's played a blinder, and people have come on board. There was something like the party's been worried about the response of black men. There was something like 20,000 black men on a call last night. They've raised millions, hundreds of thousands of black women last night. So the basis, one of the bases of the Democratic Party is solid. So there isn't any argument.
Leslie, does her nomination change the calculus? Do you think that come November the 5th, that there are simply going to be a huge number of people of colour and women who are going to come out to vote in an election that they otherwise would have stayed away from if it was just two men in their 80s?
I do think that's likely to be the case. And, you've named it, that the real issue in this election is getting the base of both parties enthusiastic enough that they actually make the effort to vote. And we know that this has been an election before this point, marked by an electorate that is as unenthusiastic as they come, certainly on the Democratic side. So I think this is really fueling tremendous energy into the party. And yes, for those diverse parts of the electorate, African-American, Hispanic, that the Republicans have been trying to make inroads into, and they have in some cases. This is a really important moment. Not everybody will be on board. The Kamala Harris candidacy, but I think a very large number will be, and we're seeing that. It's quite remarkable. It's not only diverse populations, although it's also young voters, and this is where I think Kamala Harris has a lot of potential to really excite and enthuse younger voters. She's made a lot of effort in her time on climate. She obviously has a more nuanced, more measured approach to the war in between Hamas and Israel. That will matter. And she just has an energy and an ability to connect with people in a way that's, you know, very different from President Biden, who did a tremendous job on many counts. But it is really a moment for change now.
Bonnie, back in 2016, electability was Hillary Clinton's big problem, her millstone. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, it really seems that electability was another way of saying she's a woman and we don't want a woman. And that was something that was coming out in the polls, but also from media as well, that's how the essentially misogynistic nature of the conversation was framed. Has anything changed 8 years on?
Well, we have to remember that Hillary Clinton won more votes than Donald Trump, but the President of the United States is not elected by a popular vote. The President of the United States is elected by the states, and she lost that. So that's why she's not the president. So we need to, you know, keep that in mind. The big game changer here, of course, was the pandemic. And I think that it's going to take us a while for scholars and writers to actually understand the effect of that pandemic. The United States, like the rest of the world, is in what I call a vibes recession. People have just not been feeling it. And even though, as Leslie said, President Biden has done an enormous lot, if you ain't feeling it, you ain't feeling it. So, that's as simple as that. So the game has changed. Young people in particular, she's become the queen of TikTok. So they're going to come out. And it's really that whole game change of just, we're not in the vibes recession anymore. We're in a new day. And this has caught the Republicans really wrong-footed. And Trump tweeted today that there's been a big mistake made.
It is obviously a personal popularity contest, but I wonder, Leslie, how big an impact do you think that abortion is going to have as an issue in this campaign and the potential reversal of the Roe v. Wade, or reinstatement rather, of Roe v. Wade, if she were to get into the White House?
I think it's a very significant issue. To a certain extent, it's been, you know, played out in the midterms. It's certainly been a serious issue at state level, and we've seen Americans, you know, take to the streets and push back. And Kamala Harris is very clearly identified with a reproductive rights agenda for women, and I think that is a very powerful. If you look at the polling, it looks like, you know, what's really driving people's choices. You know, how much they pay for groceries and gas and for their rent. So it's price stability, aka inflation. Fears and concerns about immigration. This is going to be a tough one for her to address because she was given the southern border, a very difficult portfolio early in her career as vice president. It didn't go well. So she will have to really step up on what she has to say about immigration, which is a real concern for Democrats and for Republicans. But, you know, if you think about the election, most people know which party they're going to vote for. They're not going to change their mind on that. They might change their mind about whether they care enough to vote. And then it's about the undecided voters in the swing states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and a few others. And this is really where the contest is going to take place. And some of that, a lot of that, is about white working class male voters. It's also about young people. In Michigan, it's about Arab American voters. So really, that contest for, you know, for the Rust Belt, for the Heartland, is what people will be watching, and they will be looking to see what kind of candidate, what kind of president, and is this, you know, does this signal a real transformation in U.S. politics? If I were Donald Trump, I would be very, very concerned, and I'm sure that he is right now.
Bonnie, is race the $64,000 question here? And if it is her color going to be a help or a hindrance?
No, not really. I mean, I think Americans are very ethnic conscious, so that's always a factor. The base of the Democratic Party is us African American women. We didn't have any problem with Joe Biden being president of the United States. So I'm not sure that's going to be it, although the Republican Party is going to make a mistake and think it is. What is important is the issue of reproductive rights for women. Women are the pretty much guarantee of being voters, and they were upset and worried, we are, about reproductive rights. So what the vice president probably will try and do and run on, which I think she can do, is to codify Roe v. Wade. Because the Supreme Court has ruled on it in relation to the states, which she might be able to do that. And if she can codify it, put it into some kind of shape, then it can happen. But women have always were going to come out for the party, Democratic Party. They'll come out for her. But what's more important is that she's now engaged Black men who were becoming quite dicey in relation to this campaign. They're on board now. I'm sure other ethnic minority men will be on board because Trump plays a big macho game with them, and they have been receptive to it to a certain extent. So now they're starting to be flipped. And also her youth. So it's going to turn out now, which is, you know, being a writer, this is actually quite hilarious. Trump is going to be the oldest person who's ever run for president of the United States. So he's in a tizzy, and the Republicans are. And they've got J.D. Vance out there now, who's being taken down by the governor of Kentucky, who's saying he's going around calling himself, Vance is calling himself a hillbilly, and the governor of Kentucky is calling him insulting, and he's flubbing it up too. So it's going to be really interesting to watch this.
And would it be morally justifiable, Bonnie, for Democrats to go after the Republican candidate on the same basis that he went after Joe Biden on his increasing age and dodderiness?
It's not only not interesting morally, it's not interesting politically. Nobody cares anymore. I mean, right now, it's about moving forward. Young people are engaged again. That is so important. Black men who were disengaged and ethnic minority men are engaged again. That's so important. And so I think we just move forward and you know. Okay. Let Trump's doing his own, which is what he's doing now.
Leslie, just to return to Bonnie's earlier point here and coin a phrase, if I might. Do you think that she's right when she says that gender trumps race now in this election?
This is a really difficult one to disaggregate. I mean, obviously these concerns overlap, but I would say that the thing we're sort of leaving out is class, and a lot of what you know, how the gender and race conversation in fact breaks down is your standard of living, your social class, and working class women and working class, especially racial minorities, are quite different from wealthy ones. So I think there are multiple dimensions here that drive things. But certainly, you know,
might her affluence and her education in that case play against her?
I think it will with some voters. And this is the strange phenomena of Donald Trump. He's a very wealthy man. He's been a very privileged man. But for some reason, people map onto him, you know, an affinity for the working class person. And J.D. Vance, of course, has his story popularized in Hillbilly Elegy, and the party's seeking to play down on that. But, it, you know, it's a tall mountain to climb when to get women on board that agenda, even with you know, even with their play to working class Americans.
Trump plays a game. He's a great marketeer. He plays a game that is subtle. Well, not to me and probably not to most people, but he plays a masculine game, you know, and that's one of his attractions to ethnic minority men. You know, it was hilarious, to tell you the truth. He plays macho man at his rallies, which actually is a satire on straight men by the Village People. They don't even know that. But anyway, he plays this song and dancing to it. And that is a subtextual part of American culture. American culture, the man standing by himself, defending his territory, going out to the West to conquer. You know, all of that is there.
There is. Trump,
and, you know, but the Macho Man thing really gets me. I just burst
out. I know. It's funny, isn't it? There's a long and a proud history in American politics of campaigns not understanding the subtext of their chosen songs, isn't there? All right, Dr. Leslie Vinjamuri and Bonnie Greer, thank you both very much for some fascinating insights there.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.